Hey guys, this is Corey, the engineer and producer for the Tastemasters podcast. Before we get into this episode, I want to take a minute to let you know that Fuse Audio Recording is looking for new clients. If you currently have or want to start a podcast, we can help you make it sound professional and polished. We can also help you with your other recording needs, such as audiobooks, music, etc. With music specifically, we offer recording and editing services, mixing, and mastering. Whether large or small, we would love to help you with your next project. You can find us on Instagram at @fuse_audio. Enjoy the episode, and until the next recording, my friends.
Listening to the Tastemasters, where we sit down and learn from artists within the world of craft beer, liquor, and various fermentation techniques. All right, guys, super fun episode. We are here to introduce everything from Offset within the realms of Wasatch. Here I have my good friend Nils. Nils, long time no see, homie.
How you doing?
I've missed you, dude.
Missed you too, man.
I really have. How was your trips?
Good, man.
Where'd you go again?
I'm trying to chase the snow because we don't have it here. So
did you go to the Northeast, right?
Yeah, I went to Vermont, going to Sun Valley, Colorado.
How was that?
It's been good.
What was the best slopes, best snow you had so far?
Sun Valley.
Yep. And that was in Colorado, right?
No, that's Idaho. Yeah.
Idaho has better snow than Utah?
Yep.
That's blasphemy.
Yeah.
There should be known for only potatoes and that's it.
That's it, yeah.
So today, Nils, we have a super awesome guest that I've wanted to talk to you for a long time, and he's a dear friend of yours. Go ahead and introduce that guest for us today.
Yeah, today we are sitting at the table drinking some beers with my good friend Patrick Bork.
Patrick!
Happy to be here.
Head brewer of Offset Brewery here in Park City.
Patrick, welcome to the podcast, brother.
Thanks for having me.
Bro, I have been wanting to talk to you for quite some time. I've heard nothing but good things about you. And I found out my favorite Baltic Porter was from you.
Are we talking about Cellfire's Baltic Porter?
Yes, it was. I remember having... So I was trying to learn different styles, and I grabbed... I didn't know what a Baltic Porter was at the time. And I grabbed the Putting on the Fritz.
All right.
And I remember giving it to Derek Hart, and I'm like, hey, Derek, I had this awesome porter from Cellfire. And he goes, oh, that's my homie, Patrick's. And that's the first time I ever heard about you.
Very cool.
And so you blew my mind, dude. So thank you. That was it's to this day still in Utah, my favorite Baltic porter, as long as it's not in barrels. I love it.
Very cool. Well, I have a certain love for Baltic porter styles. And unfortunately, I had to leave that one in barrels behind me. And probably only got to try it once or twice after
so
that.
So what made you, I just want to ask this question as a selfish question, but what made you make that style? What made you brew that at Cellfire?
I think I fell in love with that style, actually, working at Uinta as a just kind of a shift brewer. Came into Uinta, and one of the beers they were brewing at the time was Sea Legs Baltic Porter, aged in whiskey barrels.
That's a good one.
And so really it all came from that. It was my favorite Uinta beer. It probably still is my favorite Uinta beer. They, I think they remade it recently.
I think Lauren gave it to me. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. It's quite wonderful. It's a fun style. You know, I just kind of remember that first year brewing for Uinta and Sea Legs Baltic Porter and Tender Rauch beer were the two beers that I was taking home every night and maybe even mixing them a little together.
So a Baltic Rauch beer, is that a thing? Is that a style?
It is now.
Yeah. So I guess Nils, we know our collaboration. But Nils, have you ever made a Baltic Porter?
I have.
Have you made it here at Wasatch?
Yep. Yeah, so aged in brandy barrels, and the base recipe was inspired by Patrick's work with at Uinta.
It all comes around.
It really does. It comes full circle. Patrick and I go way back, you know, before we were both even professional brewers.
So let's go through, where did you meet Patrick for the first time, Nils?
Beer Nut?
Yeah, it had to be the Beer Nut. I believe I was working and you were a customer.
Something like that.
Yeah.
You've been going to the Beer Nut before you started your career, you started at the Beer Nut,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, everybody starts sort of as a home brewer, it seems, and then the Beer Nut was the place to be. I think you were working, and then we just spiraled, and you were like, oh, hey, I'm doing a brew on Saturday if you want to come by. And
yeah, I mean, the purpose of working at the Beer Nut for me was just kind of to meet like-minded people. kind of other homebrewers and hopefully industry people as well. You know, it was the jumping point to get into the industry. So Niels, you know, it was interesting meeting him because we both kind of had a similar trajectory. Kind of both these homebrewers that I think we got our brewing jobs around the same time. Yeah,
we were like months apart. Yeah. We were close.
So your first job was in Uinta, correct?
Well, technically,
first brewing job.
Technically, I was at Epic for 3 days.
Okay, 3 days.
3 days. 3 days. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
But I won't count that. Uinta started on the packaging line there. Spent about 3 months on the packaging line, and they had just fired up the new 120 barrel automated BrowCon system, and they needed more brewers, and they just kind of saw me working on the packaging line. I had given a few beers, homebrew beers, to the head brewer at the time, the brewmaster at the time, Kevin Ely.
Oh.
And he was like, hey, I'm going to give you a shot here. Why don't you come and sink or swim? Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Woolly Pig Farm killed it. Kevin Ely.
Yeah, that guy. Yep.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And so, Niels, what was your first job as a brewer? I don't think I'm ever asked.
Squatters Wasatch.
Squatters and Wasatch, yep. Right? And
So I got hired into the cellar at UBC and then sort of just did a little bit of everything there. And
And look at you. Look at you boys. You both are head brewers in Park City, kicking ass. The only two breweries in Park City.
Yeah, as of now.
Is that interesting? Yeah. Wow. So, Patrick, you mentioned Beer Nut. So, from what I understand, is you were a home brewer and then got the job at the Beer Nut, correct?
Yeah, yeah. I think...
So, walk me through that path. What got you... Okay, what was your first craft beer? Let's go there. What was your first craft beer and then Utah craft beer?
That's a hard one. You know, it was probably, you know, at the young age, probably 16 or 17.
Nothing wrong with that, homie. Nothing wrong with that.
I think I do remember actually drinking a Cutthroat at a party. And I don't remember liking it or disliking it, but it kind of struck me as like, okay, this is a locally made beer. I don't even know if the word craft was being thrown around. I didn't have friends into beer. Anything like that. A few years went on, and I remember being kind of as a young person, you're kind of exposed to beer left and right through your friends, and a lot of us drank Pabst. But my roommate brought home a pack of what was it at the time? Solstice. Solstice is Uinta's Kolsch before it was Hoodoo, and I remember just kind of falling in love with this beer, Solstice, and obsessing over this just kind of lightly brewed, locally made, like, ale. And so, you know, I thought I had to wait till I was 21 to homebrew. I don't know why that was in my head, but I waited till I was 21, went to the Beer Nut and bought one of those make-it-yourself Kolsch packs. And, first beer brewed was Kolsch, and it was kind of inspired by Solstice from Uinta, which... kind of funny to think about, because years later, there I am brewing Uinta Hoodoo, which is the Kolsch that it turned into. But it's kind of interesting, you know, growing up on those beers and then being the one to brew them later on.
And currently, we're drinking one of your Kolsches from Offset.
We are drinking
Offset. So tell us about this Kolsch that you have that you've been working on for how many years now?
I mean...
What are you, 25 now?
Oh.
Oh, I got you, Patrick. Yeah.
It's got that youthful glow about it.
Yeah, all these gray hairs.
So tell us about this Kolsch you've been brewing currently.
You know, my approach to Kolsch is just, if you're going to do it, you got to do it right. It's kind of the one last beer style out there that kind of has like a militant following and kind of a strict adherence to style, more so than Helles or Pilsner, which, you know, those have spread like wildfire. And so this idea was, if we're going to do a Kolsch, and we're going to call it a Kolsch-style ale, because you must, we're going to make it as traditional as possible. So it's everything that we could do to kind of make it traditional. We naturally carbonate. If the opportunity presents itself, we actually put sour goot into the mash to acidify it, rather than just use lactic acid. That's kind of making your own sour culture in-house. It's kind of an old German technique. And really just, getting... it's a simple recipe, man. There's not much to it. We're just talking Pilsner in Vienna. And really where I think Kolsch shines is using the right yeast. I think that's where a lot of brewers kind of like take the shortcut, because no one wants to bring a third yeast into house. So if you're going to make a Kolsch, I think you do have to have a Kolsch yeast. There's... two popular Kolsches out there. I have nothing against them. I've used them. I've loved them. But when we made this Kolsch, we wanted something a little funkier, a little more wine-like almost. And so we started having a friend who lives in Germany actually ship us Kolsches from Cologne. And we would homebrew Kolsches, me and my business partner, and kind of taste them side by side with these Kolsches from Cologne. And really just try to nail down that almost like tart wine-like funk that I think you find with Kolsch yeast. And it was that that kind of led us to settle on a yeast that not very many people use. It's a Kolsch beer is from East Coast yeast is the yeast. And it tasted more similar to us, to the Kolsches from Cologne, than the other two, or other three, I should say. So we settled on that one. So it was kind of, you know, I have nothing against those other yeasts, but man, we wanted to make something a little kind of, Kolsch funk is the only way I could describe it. It's a very unique flavor. It's almost why they call Kolsch a hybrid, whether or not, you know, you actually agree that there's a realm of hybrid styles.
Right.
I mean, it is just an ale yeast, not an actual hybrid. It kind of falls in this realm that almost is lager-esque, you know? And yeah. We just kind of wanted to nail that down, and we hoped that would be our house beer. It's kind of turned into it.
So far, so good. Because the first beer I went for, and it's the most talked about beer you've ever brewed from Jamie, Jackie, Derek, you name it. They'd be like, you got to get Patrick's Kolsch. Like, wherever it was, whoever it was always your Kolsch.
Okay.
So the style that you like fell in love with and have tried to master, that's probably the one you've been known for. From my point of view, that's the one you've been known for is this Kolsch. And homie, Niels, I mean, this is fantastic, dude.
Thank you. The amount of testing and the care and thought that went into this clearly shows in the finished product. And
yeah,
I mean, it's one of my favorite beers that you've probably ever made.
Thanks, but it's got that slight tart funkiness to it that
it's
I couldn't
that nice,
explain.
Almost acidic bite.
Yeah, acidic is a
but
good
it's
word
not
for it.
Off-putting at all.
Yeah, I've
it's
always
beautiful.
You know, you read about traditional Kolsches and everyone's like slight lemon tartness to the flavor, and it's like, how do you achieve that? And I think so many people go down the acid malt route, thinking that they can emulate that. But I think you just got to get the right yeast, man.
What made you go that way? Is it from research, from going to, you know, Cologne area? Like, have you ever been to Cologne area? Have you ever been to Germany?
I have been to Germany. It was before I was a true beer fan, unfortunately. I drank beer at Oktoberfest.
Let's go back, Patrick.
And I loved it.
That should be a group trip
Let's
for
go.
All of us.
I'm saying now's the time, man.
Yeah,
like,
right, it is.
I want to go, and I want to go to Oktoberfest, but not Munich. I want to go visit all the Oktoberfest and all the small towns. I want to rent a car, drive around all those small towns, and try all the historical beer from all the little historical towns. You know, while we're there, bounce over to the Czech Republic. It's right there.
Yeah. I would argue that's
beer.
The beer capital of the world.
Yeah. I mean, to try a Czech Pils in Prague would make my heart.
Yeah, in the Czech, like, that would be awesome. That would be mind-blowing. Is there anything in this Kolsch that you would still try to perfect?
Oh, every day, man. I'm not happy with anything I
just
make.
Just not happy. You're an artist. That's
what makes him a good brewer.
Yeah, because
right?
You're always trying to be better, dude. Mm. I like that. Because Templin told me this quote where the first 90% is the easiest, but that last 10%.
Oh, God. I mean, the last 10%
you.
Destroys you. It's just like you ask yourself all the time, how can I be a better brewer? And you're just trying to carve out these quarters of percent to get there. And there's always going to be room to grow, I believe. And I think that's what makes a good brewer. And I mean, I'm inspired by people like that. So
I was saying that, who inspires you in the beer world? Especially, let's look at Utah beer community. Pretty awesome.
Man.
I think we have a great network here in Utah.
I mean, Nils is inspiration enough.
That's exactly what I wanted to hear, my friend.
That's why I brought him.
No, man, I just, you know, like, I've been around so many. I love this local community, this beer brewing community, and I wouldn't be anywhere that I am today if it wasn't for like people like Nils and like our friendship and talking and brewing together and stuff like that. But also, you know, it's like working with Jamie Burnham. Like, I mean, she let me have my first beer related job. You know, just and I was nervous and I didn't know what I was doing and. She's like, come just, you know, work at the Beer Nut. And I mean, at the time that was so intimidating to me, but man, she's been just a huge support like my entire career.
She's someone you want on your side. She's a huge fan.
She's a force in this industry and the state. And
she's one of the most well-known beer people in the state of Utah, if not the most well-known.
There needs to be at least a couple books about Jamie and what she's done, because she's touched so many lives. By doing this podcast, I have seen how many people she's touched, and then being a recipient of that, I'm like, oh my God, Jamie, you are the GOAT, but she's the most humble person you've ever met in your life. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I gotta, you know, throw Kevin Templin's name in the ring a little bit here. I mean, I fell in love with Red Rock beer shortly into my love of craft beer, and I don't even know if I knew who he was at that point. I don't know if I knew the names of the people that were brewing the beer, but I knew that whoever was making Red Rock beer was making some pretty fantastic stuff. And I've kind of enjoyed watching him kind of blossom into his own thing, and just like, you know, I think he's really challenged Utah to step it up in terms of like beer. And I think that's the stuff that helps communities grow, is when there's someone kind of pushing the envelope a little bit. And I mean, I got to throw his name in there, even though I don't even know him that well. I know him, we're buddies, but you know, And then finally, you know, someone I've been assistant with at two different breweries, I got to say, I'm always inspired by Lauren Lurch. It's someone I've nerded out with over beer, probably more so than anyone else, you know, you know, we're just peers, but we've kind of like, you know, just kind of shut the shit a little bit so much about beer that I end up learning a lot just kind of being around people that are knowledge hungry. And she's one of the most knowledge hungry people I know. So,
yeah, that's awesome. That's beautiful, Patrick. And I just want you to know that you are saying these, you know, heavy hitters in the beer industry in Utah. And the funny thing is, in my mind, I put you and Nils up there in my category of like the Mount Rushmore of beer idols. Like, seriously, guys, like I'm a novice brewer, but I look up to you, both of you, and I just like, I'm geeked. Like, you have no idea how nervous I was. I showed up like 2.5 hours early to this fucking recording because I didn't know how to handle, like, I got to actually have a sober conversation with two of my idols, and you know what I mean? You guys, as a brewer, oh my God. Nils, I want to make beer like you. I want to have that nostalgic just passion you have, and that you have this, like, calmness about you that I wish I had. I'm not like that, dude. And then, Patrick, like, this creativity and this yearning for knowledge and always trying to be a better brewer, and without knowing you, like, and having a full-on conversation with you, I've wanted to be like you. Like, your Baltic Porter literally changed my life as a brewer, and I'm like, holy shit. And these guys I've never met, one day I'm going to meet them, and I'm going to fucking tell them that I fucking appreciate them. So
it really speaks to this state and the people that we have here, right? I mean, everybody that Patrick mentioned, Patrick himself, like, just how we've always pushed each other. You know, we got into the industry months apart from each other. And, you know, it's such a collaborative industry we have here in Utah, and we're all...
And there's no one king.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're all friends, too. Yeah. You know, I think that's a big deal.
You can't be a dick in this society, in this culture, and survive.
No,
you can't.
You can't. And honestly, you know, there's so many more people that deserve to be mentioned, too. I mean, we were homebrewing at the same time that, you know, Chris Dietrich from Level Crossing was homebrewing, and you know, we were all entering competitions, and Nils mentions pushing each other, man. We all pushed each other. We all wanted to make great beer. You know, I mean, it was a little competitive for sure, but that's what makes good beer. And so really it's like there's so many people in Utah that have crossed so many paths. I mean, so many people I've worked with at the Beer Nut, like, go on to be brewers, or people that were at the Beer Nut that are brewers that were serving me as I was a customer, you know? And so, I don't know. Utah's a really interesting community that it's growing now. But we're all kind of growing together, and we all really know each other at this point. Even if someone hasn't met someone, they're like 1 degree away. They're just, that's it. I can't imagine anyone being more than 2 degrees away from a person in Utah.
I like that. I like that a lot. So when it go from the Beer Nut, which is kind of like what popped everything. Like, that's where it just kind of boomed.
That was the hub there. That was a hub, man.
So, there was no Salt City at the time or anything. Yeah. It was the Beer Nut was the place to go. So,
and then after the Beer Nut, how did you get your job at Uinta? That was, I guess, Epic then Uinta, but how'd you get the job at Uinta?
Oh, man, I was really trying to get, I was going into nursing. Out of all things, I was working in a laboratory. I was going into nursing, and I'm sitting here asking myself on a daily basis, "What are you doing? Like, what do you really want to do this?" Like, I spent a lot of my 20s just asking myself if this is what I really want to do, and I was not totally sure if it was something I want to do. And essentially, won a few awards in homebrewing. Was like, maybe I should chase this a little bit, just see what happens. And so, while I was working at the laboratory, while I was signed up for nursing school. And finishing my prereqs, I got a job at the Beer Nut. Just kind of wanted to put my toe in the water. And once I realized it, maybe I could do this, decided to start hitting up the breweries. That's the hard part. I'm sure Niels can relate on that one. But it's always that first step into the industry that's kind of the hardest, right? And I knew that the Beer Nut was going to help, but I wasn't sure how. Uinta wasn't really answering me, nor was Wasatch or Squatters or Epic or anyone. I kept submitting resumes, but I mean, it's hard to get attention when you don't have any industry experience. So I just volunteered to work for, Uinta had a beer garden at the time in Granary Row. It was like set up in the middle of the street. And I said, I'll bartend for you guys. I didn't know how to bartend, but I was like, I could pour some beers. This can't be hard. So I was pouring beers for them, and I think that's what they finally, once I was pouring beers for Uinta for this bartending gig that would basically accept anyone because no one seemed to want to do it, that's when someone finally noticed me and was like, hey, let's just throw this guy on the can line. He's kind of worked for us in a way. And so from there, it wasn't hard. It was just like, all right, just keep my head down, do a good job, and maybe in 5 years, I'll be in the brew house. And
okay.
3 months later.
Trying to work up that corporate ladder kind
of
thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 3 months later, I'm in the brew house. It was kind of weird.
Three months.
I had to work backwards. So I didn't know anything about cellar operations for about 2 years. I was a shift brewer and had to get down into the cellar. And I remember the head brewer at the time thinking that I was crazy, that I wanted to move backwards through a pathway. They saw that moving to the brew house was the pathway you wanted to go. And then after the cellar, I asked to go to the lab. And they thought that was another weird decision, but I just kind of wanted to know everything about a brewery. So you and I worked as a cellar person, as a brewer, and as a lab tech for a while, and just tried to round myself out. And I wasn't sure if I was rounding myself out to stay at Uinta or go elsewhere. There was never like an ulterior motive. It was just, I just wanted to be educated about everything that goes on in a brewery. So I wanted to work all those roles. And that's kind of where it all kind of started a little bit.
So you said rounded. I love that a lot. So you just want to know a little bit of everything to make sure that this was a path you wanted to venture into.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't. I don't think that I could have started a brewery, whether it be Saltfire or overseeing Ogden River or Offset, if I hadn't had that well-rounded experience. Even though you don't have those tools when you're a small little startup, you kind of know your best practices, and you know what you would do if you were at a brewery with the $500,000 piece of equipment that you don't have. You know best practices. So it was very important to me that I become a person that has a well-rounded experience so that I could take those best practices at the very least and apply them to a small system.
Oh, wow. I'm sure you're learning something too, at every, Saltfire and...
Oh man!
And
yeah,
Ogden River and
startup three breweries.
You learn some things.
So did you start Saltfire? Were you the first brewer at Saltfire?
I was the first employee, first and only.
So take us through leaving Uinta to go to Saltfire. I don't know the trajectory that happened there.
Oh yeah, I mean, I had talked with Ryan Miller at the time. We were having beers together, and he was looking for a brewer and. I was just trying to be confident and saying, I think this is something I could do. And he kind of took me on and so I had to put together a brewery from scratch, but basically, having been at UN, I at least had an idea how it was supposed to work. But yeah, I mean, it's always a little intimidating trying to figure out the small things when the other stuff's always been done for you in the past,
Yeah.
Like how's this grain auger going to go? What's the pathway this thing's going to take? And really just... You get your hand into a little bit of that install and start to learn, if I had to go back, there would definitely be some things I would do differently. I trusted the plumbers to know what they were doing with a glycol system. I've since learned plumbers don't know glycol systems, man. You got to learn that stuff yourself.
Oh man.
So yeah, by the time I started the next brewery, I was ready to apply all those principles that I had to go out and learn because I kind of screwed it up the first time. And not things that couldn't be fixed, but just, you know, okay, now I know this, we're going to do it different this time. And I'm sure there was some stuff at Offset that got applied that from learning that stuff as well. I mean, right. you pick things up. Every time you do an install, you realize what you did wrong, what you would do differently, right? So yeah. Hopefully by the time you build your, third, fourth, fifth brew house, you start to get it right.
You got it down by then.
Yeah. Yeah. So then you left Saltfire and went to Ogden River, correct?
No.
Here we go.
I went back to Uinta.
Okay.
As head brewer.
As head brewer.
Yeah. And there was no brewmaster at the time. Totally intimidating.
So is this after Kevin Ely? Like, he left? And
he had been gone for a long time. They had cycled through a few head brewers. I was being brought back as a head brewer under a brewmaster, but that brewmaster had been let go at that moment. So she was supposed to interview me, and I came in, and they said, she's no longer here, but if you want this job, it's yours. They were just, you know, I knew how to drive that thing. They were looking for someone that knew how to drive that thing. I was probably, to be completely honest, underqualified for a role like that, but I stepped in, and the team was pretty small at that moment. They had some issues and basically stepped in and built up the team, got all the spots hired again and got everything rolling as smooth as possible as I could. I mean, there were some hiccups. There was a diastaticus issue and had to get rid of some beer and some fermenters. And then that was the same year that all the beers changed from 4% to 5%, had to oversee that.
Curveball.
And it was just, it was a lot of things. I think one of their buyouts happened that year, it was a roller coaster, man, and I learned a lot doing it, but ultimately I knew that more meetings were not really in my future. Like I knew that I had to be like, I don't mind doing admin work, but I really got to be a little bit of boots on the ground and hands in the mash. Like, I got to interact with the product a little bit.
Were you happy at Uinta?
Totally happy. But I just knew that I couldn't do that forever. I think I wanted to be a brewer more than I wanted to be a manager.
Yeah.
You don't realize how much sitting in front of a computer, that head brewer position can take for a brewery like the size of Uinta.
I have utmost respect for someone that can do that very well because it is extremely difficult.
Yeah, the amount of time you're sending emails and ordering and planning weeks, months in advance to make sure you have the material to brew 200 barrels, of hop nosh. It's not easy stuff to logistically speaking.
So what keeps you guys' sanity at that level?
For me, it was probably knowing that I'd have to get you in a good place and then find something that would make me happy.
And that was that when you were in that position, you felt that kind of burden? You're like, this isn't for me. Not that I can't handle it, but I just don't want it. And you're going to pass the baton off on someone who can handle that.
Absolutely.
Pressure?
I mean, I know that, I mean, I didn't approach the job from a lazy standpoint or anything. I gave it all I got, but I mean, it was at the end of the day, I knew that if I wasn't on my feet, I wouldn't be happy. So
yeah.
I knew that I had to get the team to a good place where I can step away and they would be fine. I made sure not to start pursuing anything until that moment could be handed off.
That's respectable, brother. Yeah. That really is the fact that you're just not going to, hey, fuck this shit and just leave. You're like, hey, I'm going to make sure that it's actually well maintained. Walk away at a nice,
yeah, I mean, that's where I grew up as a brewer, man. I had to give them, I had to be loyal.
Touché. And then you left, you went at that time, and you started Ogden River, correct?
Yeah, so I was hired as the official title was Director of Operations, Brewing Operations for Lotus Company. Lotus Company is a real estate company that wanted to start a bunch of breweries in Utah, and I was going to oversee all the installations and kind of train the brewers and get everything going and then move on to the next one. We had pretty big plans. Unfortunately, about 2 weeks into taking that job, pandemic hit. And as we all know, everything got a little different at that point. And maybe starting breweries wasn't well, that had to be put on the back burner. So spent some time at Ogden River, but ultimately I didn't see the other breweries happening anytime soon. Just everyone was careful, and building supplies were going up in cost and stuff. So I spent a good amount of time there, but was wondering if, you know, the next five breweries were going to happen in a timely manner, and got a little worried that they wouldn't. So started wondering, well, what if this is it? What if it's just Ogden River and I'm just kind of stepping on these two? You know, I had trained up two brewers there, and I was kind of worried that they expected me gone at some point. But here I am, just still kind of hanging out in the brew house, wondering where my next step is. And so at that time, I was approached by my business partner now, Connor Brown, and he's starting Offset. And, you know, he's a huge homebrew guy. I mean, he was probably one of the most advanced homebrewers I'd ever ran into. And we had been drinking beers, funny enough, introduced through one of the Beer Nut employees. You know, he gave Connor my number and said, call this guy. And we had been drinking beers for 2 years, nerding out on, you know, new techniques, new processes, new hops. And I had never really thought anything about, you know, that we'd go into business together. But I think he just kind of saw a moment, and I was kind of, you know, kind of in limbo at this Ogden River thing. And he kind of approached me and wanted me to be his business partner. And I've taken a lot of risks in the past 5 years. What's one more? So
what's one more? What's one more? Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. So I decided, yeah, let's do it. Let's be business partners, and you know, we're gonna kind of build this brewery from scrap and make it work from a bunch of used equipment and do it in the smallest space I've ever brewed in, and and that's kind of where we're at now, man.
I like that. So we're gonna go down the Offset rabbit hole.
All right.
If you're down okay with that, you and Nils. But before that, we're gonna take a quick break. Does that sound all right? Hit the restroom, because your boy's gotta go to the restroom.
All right.
Does that sound good?
Sounds good.
Okay. This episode is brought to you by Hopkins Brewing Company. Hopkins Brewing is located off 21st South in Salt Lake. Hopkins has live music, local art, and they use locally grown and sustainable ingredients in both their food and craft beer. Their food menu is off the charts. Their handcrafted beer is also fantastic. Upon checking out, use the code TASTEMASTERS to get 10% off any food. That's right. Use the code TASTEMASTERS to get 10% off your entire meal. Come get a pint at Hopkins and support your local breweries. This episode's also brought to you by you, if you wanted to be. We are looking for sponsors and would love to have you as part of our team. Feel free to email us for details at thetastemastersdrink@gmail.com or DM us through all social media platforms.
All right, guys, we're back. So we're going down the Offset rabbit hole, right? So you met your partner, Connor, and he came up. He come up with the idea of Offset, or did you? Where was the Offset born?
Offset was born through Connor.
Okay, so how did that? Yeah, how? What was his vision? What is his vision? What's the point of Offset?
Okay, Offset means a lot of things, and you know, Connor, we were kind of talking about this in the backyard, and he kind of pitched the idea at me, and it. Just having someone have like this passion and love for kind of this brand they want to create is a really good place to start. And that's what I saw from Connor, was just like, he had, you know, it wasn't just, he didn't want to just come up with a random word, and he didn't want to come up with random names. He wanted his beer names to mean stuff. He wanted Offset to mean stuff. Right. So it is at its basic form, you know, Connor has a degree in marketing, and for him, cool. Offset had to have, the branding had to be a little bit Offset. That's in its simplest form, that's all it is. You look at a lot of our cans, you know, the O and the S are kind of hanging off the can a little bit. Nothing, there's no structure to anything. It's a little messy, and you know, that was kind of at its core, that's all Offset is from a branding perspective. However, from kind of a philosophy kind of perspective, Offset was kind of like this idea that we want to offset the negative impact of alcohol through positive means. The idea is, you know, Connor's over 40. I'm coming up on 40. You know, we can't be going through life just crushing High Point beer, day after day, man.
What? Like 8% mosaic hopped IPAs.
Yeah, well,
as we're,
we'll make two a year. We've decided. Yeah, you got to feed some of the fans for sure, but it's not what we want to drink, and it's not what we want the majority of our beers to be. So, like, we kind of had this idea that we needed to offset those ideas a little bit. So, you know, our double IPA is only going to be made twice a year, and it's 8%, and that's our limit. Like, for that beer, like we don't want to do 9.3. We don't want to do 9.8. Like. We want things to be a little more approachable and sessionable. So, you know, most of our beer is 5% or below. Utah helps with that. We all know that. But, you know, we like drinking beer like that. But offset's also kind of like, you know, we're doing these exercise clubs on Thursday, right? We do skinning up the mountain.
That's awesome. I've done it past couple weeks.
Skiing up the mountain?
Skinning.
Skin? Yeah. Explain this to us non-skiers.
Yeah, yeah. So think of skinning as like, you know, you kind of attach like a skin to your ski, and it allows you to kind of move uphill on a ski. So
you don't slide backwards. So think of like cross country skiing, right? Like how your heel is free, right? So you're able to travel uphill with these skins on.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're basically hiking up a ski hill, and then, you know, at the end you get a kind of ski down, and that's your reward, I guess. And then you get to come back to the brewery, and we buy you pizza. Yeah, so everyone who skins on Thursday with the offset group comes back for pizza. There's also a run club that happens at the exact same time. So, like, if skinning ain't your thing, if you don't want to buy the gear for it, man, I mean, running shoes are pretty cheap compared to every other activity out there. So we do run clubs on Thursdays, and we thought that would stop during the winter. It has not. There are still there are still runners every Thursday night.
It's a popular Thursday night offset's the place to be. I've done the past couple of weeks with those guys, and it's a good group of...
For running or just for joining?
No, skinning. I don't run, but, like, I ski a lot, right? So you skin up. We all meet up first time right around 5:30, hike up to the Angle Station, which is kind of by the Bonanza Lift, and then, you know, it's definitely a rewarding ski down.
Do you guys crack one open at the top?
Not really. I mean,
my boy!
Have you done it?
I actually have not done skinning. My brew days are Thursday. I'm struggling to find time to do it. But Connor's leading it, and you know, I'm hoping to get in a couple skin days for sure. But I'm a runner. I've always been a runner. So come summertime when it's a little warmer, I'm not a cold weather runner. These guys are insane. I mean, more power to them. But I don't know about running in like single digits. That doesn't sound in the dark.
No, that sounds terrible.
But it's warming up, man, and I'm getting that itch. So I'm going to find a way to be part of that run club this
I like that.
And it's really brought out, you know, I mean, offset. Every time I go in there, I see, you know, a neighbor. Just like it's such a good local atmosphere in Park City. You know, a lot of us are so active and outside, and it's just a good hub for like-minded folks who love amazing beer that Patrick's putting out and love, you know, the beautiful place we live in.
So, Niels, now we're on that topic of it's a nice local hub. Is that detract or deter from Wasatch in Park City, the place that you brew at?
I mean, we're sitting in that place right now, and it's definitely different, right? I mean, Offset's not on Main Street, which is a big plus for me as a local, right? I mean, it's just so different. You know, we're catering to totally different people.
So you think because
we're also a restaurant, right? Like, right. So we get like the food and people
at Offset. Do you offer food?
We didn't for a while. We bounced around with some ideas that, you know, had some traction. We ultimately landed on Bavarian pretzels. We got really lucky, actually. We're all about kind of keeping things a little bit local. And, German lady walked into, Offset one day. And said, you know, you guys make beer. I want to supply you with pretzels. And it was kind of like, we've been waiting for you to walk through the door.
Where have you been?
Yeah. So as about a week and a half ago, we started our Bavarian pretzels program.
So beginning of February, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And awesome. And they, you know, that we had been doing like some breadsticks and stuff like that. And maybe we'd sell a couple a night, maybe a couple bags of chips a night, but it wasn't really catching on. Man, these pretzels, I guess that's the secret to success with the beer and pretzels. So amazing beer cheese that I think the latest beer cheese was made with our Keller beer.
By the way, Patrick, that Keller beer,
I mean,
that's fantastic.
Thank you.
If I could make something like that, I'd be like, all right, I'm hanging the boots up. I think you really like that was awesome.
I mean,
dude.
That's where my heart is. Thank you. The Keller beer and the Tamave are kind of like the two beers I reach for.
Oh, and that But, and the Kolsch is great, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, awesome. And then what are we drinking currently right now?
Well, so we're drinking kind of the opposite of those. We are drinking the double IPA made solely with Mosaic hops that I had the pleasure of selecting myself for Uinta in 2020. I believe it would have been 2020. 2020 was the pandemic?
Yeah.
Nah, 2019.
Yeah.
So I got to select these in 2019, but never got to use them at Uinta, and Uinta was kind enough to sell me a couple boxes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
so really cool. We smelled them. We thought they were fantastic. We knew we had to make a beer with them. So we kind of have these single hop series going right now where we get to showcase some of our favorite hops sourced from some of our favorite places.
That's one of my favorite hops is Mosaic. I love playing with Mosaic. Niels, I want you to break this beer down for me. Talk to me about this beer. What do you like about this beer? What don't you like about this beer? What's going on with this beer?
I mean, I love Mosaic. It's if I had to choose a hop to brew with for the rest of my life, and I only had one, my Desert Island hop, right? It would probably be,
That's funny,
be Mosaic.
I think not because we're on the same, like, I legit think the same thing. I really do, or Fuggle. Zuh.
Hallertau middle fruit for me.
Oh yeah, you are, yeah.
Traditional bastard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
I love how, you know, versatile Mosaic can be, you know, in heavy amounts like what we're drinking, you know, just resiny, dank. It's got like a blueberry aspect that I really just dig to it. And then, you know, even on like the lighter side, like some Mosaic lagers I've had, it's just like such a good hop that I think can be applied anywhere.
It's got this lime candied kind of taste to it for me, and I love that. I'm a sucker for it.
As far as American hops go, I do believe Mosaic is like, it's got to be the most complex out there. Yeah. I mean, maybe as far as any hop out there, to be honest. I can't think of one with more layers than Mosaic. I mean, it's all the good parts of a lot of different hops. So,
and it's so interesting. I mean, we've both done hop selection, and it's a hop that can vary so much too in terms of the quality or in terms of different notes. You know, if you're looking for like that blueberry, like I've smelled Mosaic that smells like blueberries, right? But then you also get like that really dank, resiny type of blueberry of Mosaic. And I think this is just the perfect balance of Mosaic. It really checks a lot of boxes for me. So,
I like that. And Patrick, are you happy with this right now?
I'm never going to be totally happy with all my beers.
Oh, my God. Oh, you are artiste.
No. I mean, okay, so it's the first time making it. Sure, like, I think it's really good. I think there's some things I would change. I'd like to dry it out a little bit, to be completely honest. Niels might know this better than I do, but one thing I found that's really interesting about brewing in Park City is you can aim for an IBU. But it is super hard to really hit what you're going for until you start to learn how to brew in the altitude, man.
We're brewing at 7,000 feet. You know, we're at about 7,000 feet right here. What, you're 6,800, right? I mean,
yeah,
6,800.
It changes. I mean, we're boiling here at 201 degrees. You know, it's different. So your hop utilization changes and the way, you know, those bitterness compounds get into your beer changes drastically.
So, Niels, was this something that someone told you beforehand, you learned?
You kind of know, like, because we all know, like, the theory behind it, right? Okay. But there's not a lot of people brewing at this altitude.
No,
you know,
are you the highest brewer in Utah?
In Utah,
hands down.
Yeah.
I think you are.
Yeah, I think he's got me by a few feet, too, so.
At least 100. At least 100. Yeah. I mean, it's all downhill to you.
Patrick, you're probably the second highest brewer in Utah.
Easy.
Yeah.
And so, Niels, going back to, like, was it a transition to figure out, okay, I can't brew like I would in Salt Lake County?
It was definitely a learning experience. For me, honestly, brewing in Park City was the water. You know, it's extremely hard water.
Yeah.
You know, Patrick has an RO system, so he's cutting a little bit of RO water with the insanely hard Park City water.
No. I'm using full RO.
You're using full RO?
I'm scared of Park City water.
Yeah, you should be.
You are a brave man.
What's making our Park City water so hard? I'm not familiar with this.
It's just, you know, we pull our water from deep wells, you know, and especially here in Old Town.
So like hella minerals?
Yeah, just like crazy. Yeah. I mean, really, really hard water.
And do you not have an RO system here at Wasatch?
No, I mean, this brewery is built in 1988, so I don't think an RO system for this size existed then.
All right, yeah. I'm going to start a GoFundMe account for Nils. We're going to do a RO system.
You know, it definitely makes a challenge. Like, the hard water makes it amazing for dark beers. You know, Polygamy Porter, right, is like one of my flagships, and I think it's one of the best beers I make because the water is so hard.
Yep. That's where we shine in Utah, right, with the hard water. But probably especially more so up here is darker styles really kind of lend themselves to the hard water profiles.
So are we still using the RO water in your awesome dark check?
Yeah, yeah.
So have you thought about fucking with the idea of doing hard water, Park City, straight Park City water, and seeing what that minerality can
make? I mean,
you'll
filter it, but yeah.
I would filter it. I mean, the thing is I'm not opposed to that. I've certainly had a water test kit at other breweries, and I could test what's going on and still hit the water profile I want. I think, you know, the problem is that I don't have another water tank for for a whole other set of water.
Right.
So I'd have to do a bit of pre-planning to make sure that the hot water tank was emptied before filling it with.
All right, Patrick, send me a recipe. I'll make it down in Utah County.
There we go.
We'll see what happens
there. A little collaboration.
hey, I'm okay with that. Yeah. But I kind of want to see what the harder water would make that beer. I want to see what it would do.
Park City, you know, it's we're still a small town. Like I've called, you know, Park City Water Department. We pull our water from 8 to 10 different sources, depending on the hour, depending on the season, whether we're pulling from like Rockport, right, which is a open reservoir, or we're pulling from these deep wells up in Deer Valley. Like our water can change within the minute that we're pulling in. Like I've tested my water at 8 o'clock in the morning coming into the building, and I've tested it at 4 o'clock, and it's completely different water.
No way.
Yeah.
No
and
way.
So and it's that's how most municipalities work in terms of they're trying to blend.
Sure.
I mean, they're trying to meet demand, obviously, but then they're trying to blend for a consistency. Right. But they don't look at water the same way that brewers look at water.
Right. And going back on that head brewing aspect is you have to look at not just ABC, but HJK, like you need to look at different aspects that people aren't probably looking at, right? And that's another curveball that you guys have to worry about being up here in Park City.
I mean, it just for me, having an RO system, it becomes part of the recipe, right? Like you get to build the water profile you want for your beers, and
sure.
and so, you know, if you're really trying to mimic like a city, a historical city, you have a blank slate to start with. It's an advantage for sure, and I feel lucky to have it because I've never actually had it at other breweries. At home, as a home brewer, I used RO for everything, or distilled for everything. But every brewery that I've worked at, you know, no one wanted to go through the trouble of dealing with an RO system because
it's expensive. I mean,
it's expensive, and it comes with, you know, there's. If they were as wasteful as they used to be, I think we wouldn't have one. RO systems have come a long way. Instead of being 7 gallons down the drain to create 1 gallon of RO water, which I think they used to be, it's you know, you get a gallon and you lose less than half a gallon to create that gallon. So the waste is a little bit more digestible. But I just think, you know, thinking about giant facilities and what a small amount of water waste to me would mean to them. And maybe that's the reason giant facilities don't have RO water. Some do. I mean, Squatters Wasatch?
Yeah, I mean, it's like maybe a third RO. So yeah. We cut in.
Yeah, most people would cut it. I don't know. I mean, it's awesome to be able to have RO water, but I understand that it's not achievable for every company just because of logistics and cost. So
gotcha. So why is Offset in Park City? Why Park City, Patrick? I mean, I understand. Nils, you can attest to this. Being in Park City, I get you have a Wasatch and Squatters in Salt Lake County, but you guys opened a brewery in Park City, which is on the opposite side of where the main population is. Why Park City, homie?
I mean, I think right now Salt Lake is taken care of, for lack of a better term. I'm not saying that there can't be another brewery in Salt Lake. There really can, but it's kind of like looking outside that box and going, you know, where in Utah could use a little tap room for the locals. And that was kind of our thing, man. Like, Connor lives up here, and it's kind of this. It was a hole, right? Like, Wasatch is awesome, and it's up here on Maine, and it's historical. But like, I don't know that the locals like traveling to Maine. So the idea was to create a really tiny little tap room that had a cafe feel for the locals, for an area that kind of needs it, you know. And we hear that every day, man. People just come through the door, just like, oh God, we've wanted this for years. We just a place to just That's have awesome. A beer, man. And so it just kind of made sense to us. And
I think it ties into the philosophy too. I think that I've seen of Offset. You know, you're up here in such a beautiful place.
Active, like a lot of people come in from skiing and stuff like that. And like our whole we lean hard into the whole like skiing thing because obviously Park City, but it's just a place to have a beer after skiing that's not necessarily on Main Street.
I was up skiing today and went with Zach and came afterwards, and I was just like, you know what, I think Patrick's got me beat as closest brewery to the base of Park City.
Oh really?
Yeah, I think you got me beat. I mean, you're close, man. I'm close too, but I think you got me beat as closest brewery to the base of Park City Mountain Resort.
We just really wanted to give Nils a little competition up here.
About
really.
Time. About time.
I appreciate it.
I just feel like there's all sorts of areas in Utah that could use a brewery, and even more than one brewery, to be completely honest. And I'm sure we're not the first little town to pop a little tap room up. It's going to happen more and more, and I believe we're kind of the first of many. I mean, it can't be long before some other towns start to see some breweries.
So Park City's known for a winter or a ski kind of town, right? So
I mean,
summer...
I'm born and raised Park City. I would say it's a year round tourist destination.
So you think that this first summer you guys will be open? Not going to be a huge deal.
No, I think Park City is it used to just be winter, right, Niels? But
it's year round.
It's year round.
I mean, we still get what, like November and like
there'll be some shoulders.
April. Yeah. But I mean, besides that, this town is bumping.
I like that. It's a location right there. What do you guys offer at Offset?
Oh man. I mean, you know, our focus is a lot of hoppy ales, and you know, those are there's a side of the menu called the offs. And that's the hop forward beers and maybe a kettle sour, and we do have a kettle sour. It is it's fruited pretty heavily. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of kettle sours myself, but I'm kind of proud of this one. I think we restrained ourselves a little bit. It's not too tart. It's approachable, and we wanted to give people that, you know, didn't love beer and maybe another option, and that was where that came from. But that side of the menu, it's mostly hoppy stuff. You're going to see some modern hoppy lagers, some modern hoppy IPAs. We call them LIPAs. Basically, it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek, you know, Utah makes you make beer at 5%. We don't think IPAs can be 5% beer, so we call it, you know, it's a lie, or it's little, or it's low, or whatever you want to use that
like
L
that.
For. But, yeah, you're going to run into a lot of the brewer's playground is right there, right? Like, just new hops, new techniques, new hop products. I mean, we recently played around with Incognito, which is kind of like a whirlpool, like flowable liquid extract for aroma. That's actually in our Dopo, which we could crack open here in a second. But we change things up on this side all the time. The other side of the menu is called the sets. The kind of the can art is going to reflect this too. You're going to see a little more structure. We don't name these beers. We just call them what they are. They're the Kolsch style ale. They're the Tamave. They're the Keller beer. The pale lager. And the idea there was a strict adherence to kind of like traditional methods, traditional ingredients. I mean, and mostly you're going to find lagers over there, to be completely honest, aside from the Kolsch. and the Alt.
Those are a true brewer.
Yeah,
you're brewing lagers over there. Hey, so Patrick.
It's Well, I mean, it's funny how lagers are starting to kind of come up in the craft beer world, and I couldn't be more happy because.
Yeah, you think.
that they're coming up or not?
Yeah, like I don't know. We've talked for the past 10 years of like how much we want like pilsners are going to be the next good thing, right?
Well, I don't know, man. I mean, some of these hype breweries around the country are just kind of lager focused.
All right.
And I don't know, man. Even if they weren't, this is what I want to make.
I completely agree. I mean,
I don't know, man. You spend enough time drinking big, heavy, flavorful stuff, and you're around it, you're smelling it all the time. There's something really cool about just like drinking a crisp, easy to drink, well-made lager, or I'll throw Kolsch and all in there too. But beer-flavored beer. We didn't coin that term, but that's what we call them, man. Those are our beer-flavored beers.
Yeah.
And it's not a playground, man. We're not playing around with stuff over there. We're just trying to execute.
Yeah.
And yeah. So
and you're going with really quality stuff. I mean, it's quality, and you're going traditional route. Why traditional route? Because I feel like you said Connor brought the Offset name. Did you add the beard part to it?
I think where Connor and I really kind of jived was this love of kind of traditional lager styles and kind of this new realm of new hops and playground of hops. Like we kind of liked the same stuff, to be completely honest. And you know, there's all this stuff in the middle that we don't really want to play around in. And nothing wrong with that stuff. It's just not what speaks to us. And
you don't want to make an apricot hef?
Or blueberry hef?
Sure.
Or jalapeno cream ale?
Not quite there. I mean, I like the jalapeno cream ale. I don't know that it's our brand, though. And that's where I'm getting at is, like, we want to specialize in two fields, man. And that's like hoppy ales and traditional German-style beers. And and maybe you'll see some stuff that veers from that path once in a while, but, like, we know that we'll never be great at something if we're trying to do everything. So for us, it was like, let's pick these two realms to play in and master them before we even consider doing anything else.
That's beautiful. I like that, Patrick. For those who want to try Offset but are too lazy to drive all the way to Park City, where can we grab Offset beer, and will there be more places for Offset beer?
I do hope that there will be more places. We do have to be a little careful with our distribution because our fermenters are 7 barrels. And, you know, these are the tiniest fermenters I've ever dealt with, and we only have 4 of them. So product-wise, we don't have a ton, but we really don't want to burn. We don't want to burn the accounts we have by not having availability. And we also have to be careful not to run out the tap room. So as we get into this distribution model a little bit, we're really doing toe in the water stuff. And so I kind of hit up the obvious places, the places that I would love to drink as a craft beer enthusiast in Salt Lake. And that would be like the Beer Hive in the Bayou. Both of those places are carrying some of our high points. There's a new cider bar that's just,
I was just there.
Dangin'. Awesome.
Yeah. Rio's killing it.
Rio at Scion Cider. And, man, I've really opened my eyes to cider a little bit. But, you know, he's carrying some beer, too. And he pulled in one of my favorites, which is our Czech Dark, Tamave. And one of our High Point IPAs, which is great. So there's a few places. Right now, that's kind of it. I would expect more in the future. But we really got to make sure that we can, like, yeah, not spread ourselves too thin and move into this slowly. What I can say is we just ordered a bunch of 6-barrel kegs, and we got a batch of Kolsch coming up dedicated to those 6 barrels, and that is meant for tap handles outside of Offset only. So
Nils's house, my house.
Yep.
Yep.
And
I mean, one of my house, of course.
So there's 3. Yeah. I'm okay with this.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that. So, Patrick, I'm going to ask you a bunch of other questions while we open the last beer.
Okay.
Unless we want to open more beers. But I say we got to open one more. Because Nils is itching for another beer.
Oh, you know it.
So, Nils, I mean,
I'm tempted to open the Keller, but I'm also tempted to open the Dopo because Dopo is kind of our house IPA. Nils, you guide me in the right direction here.
Let's go Keller.
Keller it is.
Okay. So go ahead and explain this one there, Patrick.
All right. This is a fun one to explain, actually. I think we should really... Let's do a rinse. you know, we were kind of, we had pulled this yeast into offset that we really like for malty beers. It's the yeast is from the Ondex Bavarian Monastery. And, you know, it seems like a lot of people like kind of go for the Weinstephan or the 3470 yeast or maybe Augustiner. And man, I love those yeasts, but there's something magical that the Ondex yeast does specifically with malty beers. So after kind of making a few lagers with kind of 3470, we decided to pull in the Ondex for our malty side of the lager profile. And, you know, we had the Tamave and the Helles, and we kind of were talking, you know, what could we do? What other malty style do we want to play around in? And just to get a little more generational usage out of this yeast. And we kind of came up with this idea of, like, why don't we make a Keller beer? But why don't we make a Keller beer that not everyone's making? So we kind of took a historical approach to it. So what we've made is like essentially a Franconian Keller beer. It's prior to the popularity of pale Keller beers, you're going to see kind of these amber Keller beers. And they're like the true historical ones. And they're not super amber in style. They're just kind of a touch of color, you know, maybe some Munich, maybe it's a biscuity note. And we really thought that this yeast could play well in this style. So it's kind of almost like plays in this realm of a Vienna lager, except kind of like fresher, a little bit, you know, unfiltered is fine, you know, Keller beer, cellar beer, you know, that's what it means. Yeah. So, we kind of made this not really thinking too much. We thought it would be just kind of a side brand, but man, like we were canning this thing up. And kind of sipping on it a little bit, you know, you got your low fills and just kind of turning to each other going, is this one of our best beers? Like, and we fell in love with it. And honestly, like it's on the schedule again. We have to do it again because it was supposed to be a one-off just to get a little more usage out of a yeast. And you know, I always thought that I was like a pale lager guy. Like I only would like pale lagers. And here I am drinking something with like kind of a touch of red to it, and I love it, man. It hits all these notes that just speak to me about beer flavored beer. You got so much malt.
Yeah, that malt character, that nice bitterness that backs it up. I mean, it's
cheers, homies.
Such a well balanced beer.
Thanks, Patrick.
Cheers, guys. Woo. The one thing I will say though that wasn't traditional about it was we did use kind of a new school German hop. It's not super new school, but it definitely isn't, you know, noble. We did put Saphir in on the back end. It's a hop I kind of fell in love with while working at Uinta. 801 specifically has a bunch of Saphir in it. And I knew that like I couldn't ignore some of these new German varieties. So it is a blend of some traditional noble hops as well as Saphir, which I think adds like kind of a lemony brightness to it. Makes it kind of a little more crisper and refreshing, you know, kind of maybe cuts through some of that biscuity stuff to make you want to take another sip.
Yeah. This is awesome because I think I bought three of these because I want to take them back because, Patrick, the Baltic Porter blew my palate, blew my mind as a brewer, as a consumer. This one is what, as a brewer, I'm trying to create. What's a traditional style that I can give a little twist on and make it sexy?
Yeah.
You nailed it right here.
I mean, it's also awesome to be sitting in your tap room and see it be so well received by the general public too, right? Like us as brewers, like we love these kind of beers. And this has always been the style we like want to be the next big thing.
Yeah, I mean,
right? And to see it so well received in your tap room is just awesome.
Congratulations, dude!
That like people are like loving on beers like this.
I gotta give it to the locals or you know whoever's coming through that door. We were a little timid. We were a little worried that maybe like making all these lagers that, you know, maybe they wouldn't sell. Maybe they were just gonna kind of be this thing we only had one or two of, and I don't know if palates are changing or the clientele up here is just a little more sophisticated with old school traditional beer. But I really do think that, you know, our Keller beers, our Helles, our Tamave, You know, they're all selling just as well as the hoppy beers. And that means I get to continue brewing them, which that's awesome.
I'm okay with that. I really am okay with that. I think what you're doing is awesome, Patrick. I think your path has been interesting, but it's also led you to where you're at now. And I feel like, and this is my perspective, you're not done yet.
No.
You're not done yet. And I love that continual, I need to grow, I need to be better, and that process, because you're the example of what it takes to be a badass brewer. You really are.
Thank you.
With that being said, what's some future goals you have for Offset and future goals you have for Patrick the Brewer?
Oh, man. It's an interesting question. We know that Offset has to grow. We know that Offset cannot remain a 7-barrel capacity fermenter brewery. You know, and we're packed in there like sardines. We can't even add more equipment. We know that it has to be a bigger building. One thing that's super important to us is that we really don't want to grow too big to the point we lose control of our product. We take a lot of pride in like the control we have over our product, to the point that we kind of plant ourselves behind the bar to make sure that we can explain our philosophy, we can explain our brands to the consumer if needed. So as we grow, we don't want to lose that. So I envision, you know, Offset 2.0 as a larger facility. And maybe instead of buying a bunch of used equipment, we find the actual equipment we want to give us the control we need. The thing about my business partner, Connor, and myself is we're a little bit control freaks. We like the control over the process. We like hitting 4 mash steps on every beer, including IPAs. I mean, it's this labor of love that some people would say we're, you know, maybe not even doing anything, but we think it does. So the next equipment has to have the ability to do stuff. And maybe that's decoction, or maybe that's, you know, a small system for krausening. I mean, that's high on my list, man. And really, I hope after, you know, proving this concept and we get received very well, that we can take it to the next level and really do some cool stuff with some more control. Not that we don't have control now. We can step mash now, like I mentioned, and that's very important. We control our water, and that's very important. Steam was very important for heating control and stuff like that, but we're always going to want more. So I'm hoping that Offset 2.0 can be more control, more toys, to make better beer.
It'll come, brother. Like that yearn for growth and that yearn for expanding your knowledge is still there. Nils, I have a question for you. You've known Patrick for quite some time. You've seen his growth from the beer nut as a home brewer and the beer nut until now. What's something about Patrick that you look up to and something you slightly envy?
Oh, you always ask the killer questions, man.
Tough one.
Yeah. I mean, Patrick is easily one of my best friends, right? Like we've come such a long way together, and you know, we've taken different steps, but to have him here in Park City, like so close, it's just like, it's really coming full circle,
yeah,
which
full
I think,
circle, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, it's so cool, right? Like I see you now more than ever, which I fucking love. Yeah. You may hate, but
no, it's weird that our paths have been so similar and we've ended up in a similar place.
Right. You know, just like his eye for growth and like, you know, he is so true to himself, and he knows what he wants. And if it's not right, it's not right. And like, I envy that, right? Like, cause that takes balls, right? To be able to like jump ship sometimes and be like, you know what? This is sweet, but not for me. That's huge, to be true to yourself in that way. And I envy that in Patrick.
Thank you.
I mean, yeah, it's true, brother.
It really is. Cause I mean, you said you set a precedence for you jumping ship on a lot of things, and it may have given you like a black mark in your eyes, I guess. But
yeah.
To me, it's not. It's just trying to figure out what's going to work for you. Like Neil said, you have the balls to be able to be like, hey, listen, I'm going to do what's right for myself, not for anyone else.
Yeah.
For me, who cares what anyone else thinks? You're the artist. you find the paintbrush and the canvas you want to go on. Like, you know what I mean? And that's what you're trying to do, and you're slowly doing it because Nils and I are enjoying your beers, and every single one of your beers I've had, Patrick, fuck you.
Yeah, they're good,
if
man.
I could be a fraction of the brewer you are, man, I think I'll do a great job. I really do.
Awesome.
At what point do you think you hang up the boots?
In my mind, never, man. I just, every day I'm back there in the brew house. I cannot envision doing anything other than what I'm doing.
You want to go back to nursing? Are you sure?
Yeah, no. I think that turned out pretty bad for some nurses in the past few years. I think I made the right call.
You kind of dodged a bullet there.
Whew. Yeah, man. I don't know. I know there's going to be a time where throwing slept around sacks of grain and burning yourself on accident and running into
caustic burns.
Running into CO2 nipples and you know, I know there's going to be a time when that gets to be too much. But in my head, it doesn't even come soon, man. Wherever I find myself in this industry, I will always have my hand in production. I'm kind of always been obsessed with the idea of being a blue collar guy, and brewing gives me this real satisfaction of kind of combining this idea of being a kind of a blue collar worker with also having to study and have knowledge and kind of do mathematics on the fly, man. And so it's this melding of hard work, but also kind of bringing education and techniques and process and learning to, and I literally can't even think of any other career I would do.
I like that, brother. I really like that. Yeah. Are there any collaborations we're going to see from Offset here soon?
Oh, man.
I mean, Nils over here itching for
Nils. Well,
we got to get that Park City collab going.
Nils and I have talked. We got to do one. We got to set this
collab
up. Yeah, yeah. I do, casual conversation. Can't confirm anything yet. But, there's going to be...
It'll happen.
Confirm nor deny.
It'll happen at some point.
No, Nils and I will happen. I'm alluding to something else. I've had a casual conversation with Lauren Lurch down at UNA. And we're thinking about a smoke tellus. Well, we'll see. I would really love to do that. I love smoky beers. Notably, I do have to mention, we do have a collaboration coming up on... March 3rd, I believe, with Cellar Maker Brewing out of San Francisco.
Oh, cool. How'd that come about?
They're kind of buddies of ours. It's actually kind of where we bought our system from. So yeah, we've sent them a few beers. They've been fairly impressed, and they happen to be skiers at Park City Mountain Resort. So
fun how that works, huh?
Yeah, it only made sense. Hey, while you're in town, stop on in. We'll do a collab.
Yeah, I like that. Well, Patrick, I'm excited for you. I'm excited to see what the future holds for you. Man, again, it's an honor to be at a table with you two juggernauts, in my mind. I think you guys are the second generation of badass brewers, and the fact that I can, be in those footsteps or kind of watch you guys as examples is huge to me. What you guys are doing for Park City is ginormous. I hope that it lasts for a long time. I hope it continues to go as far as possible. Nils, I think the world about you. I think you are a great brewer. I think you have a great knowledge. And thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely.
Thank you for your hospitality here at the brewery. Patrick, thank God you are a friend. Like, I'm glad you have this big-ass heart and this big soul towards growing, learning, and being a better brewer. In my mind, I thought I had this big passion for brewing, and then I come and meet someone like you, and you just blow me away.
Dude, you're doing a podcast on brewing, man. You got passion. Yeah. Don't short
it's exactly,
yourself.
It's exactly what I said,
Listen,
man. Your passion
this
is infectious.
This is not about me, guys.
I know,
stop turning it back on me.
I know.
But no, Patrick, I hope that in the future I can pick your brain some more, and if there's anything I can do for you in the future to make your success become a success, let me know, because I want to see you thrive, brother. You are doing great things. I've seen your path. I followed your path in a weird roundabout way. And to see you here in Park City and doing what an Offset and what you're doing with beers, I think, holy cow, dude. You are a fantastic brewer. If you ever question that, stop. text Nils and I, because I'll remind you that you are a fantastic. Like, there's a reason why everyone's, from Ogden all the way down, talks you up, because you are You lead with that heart and that soul. And don't stop doing that, brother. But is there anything else I can do for you as a friend, as a brewer, or for this podcast?
Just keep doing what you're doing, man. And if you, you know, if you ever need a co-host out of me, I'm always available.
Oh, my God. You heard it, Nils. You see what happens? Yeah. Or a collaboration?
We should get, a big round table with everybody we've talked about tonight.
I thought about that. Yeah. I don't have enough mics for that,
dude.
Yeah,
I was going to say, you're going to need a few more.
Yeah, I'm going to need, 1,200 mics for that. It's so cool. Oh, man. Because I've talked about, the Taste Masters, a festival. I just want all my, all the cool people I've interviewed at one spot, and I could talk to you guys. But that's, one day it will happen. You know, one day, something like that would be cool. But, yeah, I think one of these days I want to do, a brewer, a distiller, and a cider maker talking about, just their crafts. I want to hear... And a kombucha maker and a sake brewer. It'd be really cool.
Utah has all but one of those, I believe.
We have all of them.
We got a sake brewer.
We do?
Yeah. All female.
Sake.
Yeah, all female.
Yeah, Jill, she's the first female sake brewer here in Salt Lake.
No
Utah.
Shit.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's pretty cool.
Sake. It's awesome. But, guys, again, thank you for your time here on this precious Friday night. Again, you guys are awesome. I love the fuck out of you. If there's anything else I can do for you, let me know. Is there anything else you guys have for us today?
I think that's it for me.
Just loving having Patrick in town, and, rising tide raises all ships. And
hell yeah.
Park City's the place to be, people. I mean,
yeah. Come on up.
No, don't tell everyone that. Everyone will come here. Well, in that case, gentlemen, until the next beverage, my friends.
Yeah. Cheers. Thanks for having us on.
Absolutely.
Cheers, man.
This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. You can find us on Instagram at @the_Tastemasters, on Twitter at The Tastemasters, and on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends, and thanks for listening.
Produced and recorded at Fuse Audio. Give them a follow at Fuse_Audio.